When you listen to lies, it causes a lot of pain.
I ended up in a 2-year relationship with a guy who had convinced me that he would change. And his past was he had done drugs. And I told him from the very first day I met him, I was not going to tolerate that. And so for 2 years, I believed that he was going to change. And I'm not saying that I still don't believe people can change, but behind my back, he was still smoking pot. He was still doing those things. And that ended up hurting me in the long run because I believed his lies. And I don't know, I've always been a fixer, I guess. I guess I felt like I was his accountability because he was with me. He wasn't going to do those bad things. But even though he was with me, he was doing it behind my back. So I guess I felt like I was fixing the situation by staying there, and I wasn't at all.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Walgemuth, co-author of Lies Young Women Believe, for February 8th, 2018. I have to have a boyfriend. This idea has led many young women into some bad choices. It's just one of the topics covered in the newly updated book, Lies Young Women Believe, and the Truth That Sets Them Free. It's co-authored by Dana Gresh and the host of Revive Our Hearts, Nancy DeMoss Walgemuth. Today, Nancy and Dana will explore the truth about dating relationships.
I've talked to a number of 20-something women in the course of working on this book, and one of them on our staff came to me and she said, Nancy, this is the entrance for so many other lies. It's this sense that if I don't have a guy paying attention to me, desiring me, that I am inferior, I am worthless. And I think there is something in the, again, God made men and women different. He made them both and he made them different. And there is something in the heart of a woman that longs to be desired. And so teen girls, as that starts to be awakened, those desires start to be awakened. They tap into this. And but it's again, it's not just teens. It's as women, we go through our lives wanting to know, is there a man who cares? Do I matter? You know, you can have all the girlfriends in the world, but if there's not a man who thinks you're special, then you feel maybe there's something wrong with me. And that those seeds are planted very young.
I was wondering about dating and if it's your maturity level or if it's your age.
It's your parents. That's a really good question. It's probably a little bit about both. If you look at
Dana Gresh spends a lot of time interacting with teenage young women.
When we surveyed the young women we talked to in these discussion groups, about 2/3 of them said, yeah, I really don't feel value unless I have a boyfriend. I feel like something's wrong with me. That's a lot of young women. Now, you might think it's higher, you might think it's lower. What was a little shocking to us is we were real careful about what kind of school type these girls were. Were they public school? Were they Christian school? Were they homeschool girls?
How many of you are homeschooled?
Yeah!
I kind of thought.
Cool.
Okay. Hands down. How many of you Christian schooled?
Cool.
Woo! Go girls. How many of you are in public school systems?
Woo!
All right. So it's
we wanted to see, is there a difference in the lies that they're believing? And in many of them, there were. However, in this particular area, the level of bondage to what they believe about the value that a guy can bring to their life was very much the same, no matter what school type they were. That was shocking to us.
According to Dana, when a young woman gives in to this lie, it can begin to show in the way she acts around guys or in the way she dresses.
She may even, if her parents want her to dress a certain way, she may rebel against them behind their back. I know of a young woman who comes from a home that really teaches modesty and purity. Beautiful young 14-year-old girl got to school and took off all the clothes mom put on her that morning, you know, because mom said, no, you can't wear that. Well, the daughter thought, I'll just layer up till I get to school and then I'll take it all off. And so was that girl looking for anything sinful to happen? I don't think so. I think she was just trying to go along with the crowd and she wants the attention of a guy.
So what's at the heart of this desire common to many young women? Nancy says there's not just one answer.
It's a highly sexualized era, and that's at play all the time. And the amount of media exposure, which is another whole area we deal with, is fueling and feeding this. But, you know, so often Satan's lies and his traps are him offering to us things that God would want to give us, but before God's time or apart from God's way. And so it's a legitimate desire fulfilled in an illegitimate way. And God did create women and men to partner, to go together. And he created marriage, and he created women to be attracted to men and men to be attracted to women. And he wants there to be the beauty of fulfilled, complete physical, soul, emotional, spiritual love and oneness in that relationship. And in its time, when it's time, as the Song of Solomon says, to awaken love, that's a beautiful thing. That's a gift from God. But I think the lie is, and the deception is, you have to have that now, or you're ready for that now. And what happens then when it's 13, 14, 15 years old, and how many letters have I received from grown women saying, I had to have a boyfriend, led to, I have to have a husband. It wasn't God's time. It wasn't God's person. I forced it, made it happen, and now here I am, three marriages later, heartache, heartbreak, broken pieces strewn all over the planet of our lives. Oh, I wish I had waited for God's time and for God's best. And I think that's what we're wanting to say to girls is, there's nothing wrong with those desires, with the natural attraction. That's a good thing. But let it be fulfilled in God's way and in God's timing and in God's progression. And if you will wait for God's best and his timing in your life, then this will be beautiful. It will be wonderful. It will be a blessing. It will be a gift. It will bring you joy. It will bring you happiness. But if you insist on having it your way in your timing, you're going to bring heartache and sorrow.
Another common lie Nancy and Dana address in their book, Lies Young Women Believe, is one that says, it's okay to date whoever I feel like dating, even if he's not a Christian.
This was a really difficult lie for us to navigate through, because when we met with these Christian young women across the nation, they said pretty much across the board, I intend to marry a Christian. But then when we got under that, maybe that truth, to how is their behavior living that truth out, they would say things like this: I really want to marry a Christian, but I'm not looking for marriage right now, so it doesn't really matter now. Or, I don't really think it matters if the guys I date are Christians or not. For one thing, we're just in high school, so religion isn't an issue now. Those are two verbatim quotes from these. I can't emphasize enough that these are young, really outstanding Christian girls, most of them. And they're saying that truth of God will fit my life later. But that's not how God's truth works. It fits now.
And closely related to that, so-called missionary dating, where a young woman assumes she can help her unbelieving boyfriend come to Christ. Dana says that rarely works.
Let me read something to you that might make you cringe. This is an exact quote from one of our focus groups. How much these girls can romanticize missionary dating. If you plant a seed, it can make a beautiful flower. You're spreading God's word, whether the relationship works out or not. If you can just compromise, think about it, you can impact a non-Christian. Wow.
And I know we're talking to a lot of people coming from a lot of different perspectives, but I have been really saddened to see how many Christian parents don't really feel strongly about this whole issue of their children dating non-believers. And we can't put this all on the teens. I've talked with Christian parents over the years, and they tell me about someone that their son or daughter is dating, in a relationship with. And of course, the first thing I want to know is that person a believer? And I say, well, you know, I'm not sure, but after they've told me about how nice this person is and what a sweet relationship it is, and I think some of the blame for this, I'm not trying to ascribe blame, but I'm saying parents have a huge responsibility here, that not only do you not marry a non-believer, but you don't date a non-believer, you don't have your closest emotional attachments be with non-believers. Two can't walk together except they be agreed. And I think for parents to be pushing kids together for starters, and pushing boy-girl things when their kids are young, and then they say, well, ah, they're 14 and they're wanting to date. What's the problem? Well, we've been pushing them together since they were in the nursery. And then to say, well, as long as this is a good person, maybe this is okay. So just a caution there for parents. And then I wish I had a nickel for every woman who has come to me later in life and said, if I could go back and do it again, I didn't think it would lead to marriage. My dad used to say, look, you will never marry somebody you didn't date, you know? If it's not a person who is qualified biblically for you to marry, then don't get into the relationship.
Last fall, many women began using social media to go public about experiencing sexual abuse or assault. They did it by posting hashtag MeToo. We asked Dana Gresh, how can we help our teenage young women process this cultural phenomenon?
Oh, our daughters are growing up in a world where male strength is distorted greatly. And sadly, this makes them very vulnerable. I see a lot of people speaking out against the men who have victimized us. Like, it's a collective voice now. It's women. All of us are saying men have not treated us well. And, you know, there is a crisis. We definitely have something to address in our culture. And I am, on one hand, blessed that the conversation is happening. It's almost like there is a cleansing happening in our nation, and men who have not treated others with respect and dignity are forfeiting very powerful positions and rights. And I think that is good. I think that is evidence of godliness in all of us, that we have a distaste for this abuse. But on the other hand, I can't understand why there is a hashtag MeToo campaign that everybody's excited about. And at the same time, this very month, many, many women across the nation are celebrating the release of 50 Shades of Grey, the third movie in the trilogy. This seems like a horrible disconnect to me. And so I've studied this because women are acting like, well, we don't want to be victimized by men, but on the same token, we really like this transgressive bondage, dominance, sadism, and masochism celebration happening through the 50 Shades of Grey books and movies. And it's not just women outside the church who are celebrating. One Barna survey found there was no statistical difference in the percentage of church versus unchurched women who had read 50 Shades of Grey. This breaks my heart. And I can't understand why there's not more of an outcry. It does impact our daughters. Our daughters are vulnerable. We find that girls aged 18 to 24, well, women aged 18 to 24 who read 50 Shades of Grey are 25% more likely to have a partner who verbally abuses them, and I think it's about 34% more likely to have a partner who exhibited stalking tendencies. Now, as I have tried to raise awareness of that, one little voice saying, hey, in a Me Too culture, can we be upset about this too? People say, well, you know, maybe those girls were already at risk. Well, all the more reason we just took girls who were vulnerable and made something evil and transgressive, normalized it for them. And now they are more vulnerable. And of course, if that's not the case, we are taking girls who were not vulnerable and telling them that it's okay for them to be abused. There's no such thing as sexy abuse. It's just abuse. So that's one thing that I'm concerned about. I think that in light of the Me Too conversation, it's a great opportunity to talk to our daughters about their value, how precious they are, that they are created as image bearers of God, but also to say, listen, you have some responsibility in how you present that value to the world. And one of the things you need to do is protect your own mind and your own heart so you don't create a place where you're more easily preyed upon. The average age of the first inception of pornography right now is about 11 years old. Of course, it is more common for boys to have that encounter at a young age with visual pornography, videos, and photos. But girls are, it seems like they have a proclivity towards words. And that's what 50 Shades of Grey shows us, is that you can take words and create pornographic material that is appealing to women because it's in a storyline. When Dr. Julie Slattery and I wrote about our concern for the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon and how it's really doing to women what the advent of the internet did for men, it is taking down the walls of, you know, pornography is now acceptable and normal in our culture. And it's doing that for erotica for women. Erotica is now acceptable and normal in our culture. So I think this is a really important conversation for us to have with our daughters. Some of the scriptures that come to mind is the Bible verse that talks about being double-minded. If you're double-minded, the Bible says you're unstable in all of your ways. So when we have a culture that says hashtag me too is the bandwagon everyone should get on, and I'm not saying that it's not a good thing, it is cleansing our culture. But at the same time, we're not saying that 50 Shades of Grey should also be something that we are claiming victimizes women. That's double-mindedness. And the Bible says that makes us unstable in all of our ways. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to just talk to our daughters about how we can protect our minds and our hearts and our spirits so that we're not vulnerable.
My 11-year-old daughter disobeyed, got online, and did some searches that pretty quickly led her to pornographic images. How can I, as a mom, talk with her about the lies and the truth related to sexuality, as well as the culture's wrong understanding when it comes to these things?
Well, oh, my heart breaks for you because this is really scary. When you find that your child is looking at pornography online, your heart just breaks. But I want to caution you, maybe not to react in the way that's most natural. And I think the natural ways to react are to freak out. I've heard lots of teen girls talk to me about how their parents freaked out when they found out they were looking at pornography. And what that actually does is increases the shame. And there should be some guilt and there should be some conviction. But shame is not a good thing. Shame is a tool of the enemy. Shame is taking a good tool of God's Spirit, conviction, which says, I did something bad. And it's turning it into the lie, I am bad. I am bad. One of the most vulnerable areas for our children to experience shame is when it comes to pornography and erotica use. It's so important that we help our kids understand, you know, why did you look at that? Let's ask them, why did you look at that? Many times, children under the age of 13, 14, 15, they're not really looking for a sexual experience online. They're curious. They have questions that haven't been answered yet about sex. And we find that one of the most search words by children under the age of 13 on the internet is the word sex. Many times they're just trying to figure out answers. And so one of the things you have to ask yourself as a parent, have I talked with them about sex? Do they understand the basic mechanics and that this is a beautiful gift to be treasured and waited for and experienced within the confines of marriage? If you haven't had that conversation with them by about the age of 9, which terrifies some parents, but most Christian counselors and experts will say that our children are developmentally ready by about their 9th or 10th birthday to understand the basic mechanics of sex and that it's a gift for marriage. Now, if you're saying, I don't know, I think my child's the exception, well, here's the thing about that. We know that children's value systems are pretty much baked by their 13th or 14th birthday. George Barna is so convicted of this that he has this quote out there that says something like, what you believe by your 14th birthday is generally what you die believing. Now, of course, we might understand the full theology of the things that we believe, but it is true that in most cases, we have our belief system pretty much baked by that age. And we also know that moral development really happens strongly between the years of 9 and 12. As a mom, my husband and I made a decision together as a mother and a father that we really wanted our children to have as many of those years as possible for us to answer as many questions as possible about sex. And so we introduced the topic to them in their ninth year, and we answered a lot of silly questions and a lot of serious questions. And I think that we have a responsibility as parents to do that. Listen to me. I want to tell you something as gently as I can, but as strongly as I can. Many times, our discomfort in talking to our children about sex comes from our own misuse of the gift. We teach our children how to care for other parts of their body. We teach our children how to eat well. We teach our children how to sleep when they struggle with sleep. Why can't we teach them about this part of their body? Why are we ashamed of it? It's because we've misused it, and there's so much misuse around us in our culture. So make sure that you take the time to have that conversation with them, because that might curtail the curiosity that leads them to pornography. But then, let's say they did look. Please be careful with how you react. Maybe share a story about how you experienced or saw something related to sexuality that was a little shocking or jarring to you because it was a little too soon or it was inappropriate. Give them the sense that they're not in this boat alone. Their curiosity and their temptation, they're not the first ones to experience that. I find that when you do that, you can have a richer conversation with them about how pornography is harmful, and then you start to get to the lie. Why did you look at it? Or why did you look at it again? Or why did you go back? It looks like you've been on the internet 5 times looking at this stuff. Tell me why. Well, it was interesting to me. It made me feel good. Well, why did it make you feel good? Did it make you feel bad in any way? Just ask lots of questions. And as you ask questions, it's going to lead you to the lies that may or may not be present. Again, remember, at that age, it might just be curiosity. But if you do find those lies, take time to be very careful and thorough with them, making sure not to plant shame in their precious little hearts.
Relationships and sexuality can be a confusing minefield for young women to step through. But parents and mentors can help remove the confusion and point teenagers to Christ. One young lady at a True Woman teen conference stated it well. Nancy asked her to share a takeaway from the conference.
Okay, I saw one other hand over here.
Right here. That a girl has to get so lost in God that a guy has to seek him to find her.
Oh, don't sit down. Okay, you gotta say that again. That is really good.
That a girl has to get so lost in God that a guy has to seek him to find her.
That is good. That is good. Did you say that, Dana? Wow. That is profound. And that alone will just have a huge impact on your life if you live that way.
And that's the issue. It's an issue of the heart. Ultimately, it's not an issue of the behavior or the relationship. Those are symptoms. Those are fruit. And the parent wants to get to the heart. And, you know, I've watched good parents make good choices, and then you still realize it's God who has to cause it to click and turn on the light. And that's where a parent has to be praying. And I know Bob and Dana, as parents of teens, are, I'm sure, fervent in prayer that the Lord will make the connection, turn on the light, and by His grace draw their hearts.
That's Nancy DeMoss-Walkemuth, encouraging every parent to be prayerful and vigilant, staying involved in their teenage daughter's relationships. Nancy and our guest, Dana Gresh, write about this in the newly revised book, Lies Young Women Believe and the Truth That Sets Them Free. This new edition just came out this week, and we'd like to send you a copy when you support Revive Our Hearts with a financial gift of any amount. I hope you'll get a copy and start reading it. Then ask, what young woman in my life could I share this with? then invite her to go through the book together. Ask for Lies Young Women Believe when you call with your donation. The number is 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or visit reviveourhearts.com. And to get additional copies of the book and the study guide to help your small group discussion, visit reviveourhearts.com or call. Again, it's 1-800-569-5959. Most teenage girls dream of someday having a family, but have they really thought through the deceptions they might be falling for when it comes to being a wife and mother? Nancy and Dana will talk more about that tomorrow. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Walgamuth wants to help you know and love the truth. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.